Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hi-yo. Welcome to Q's Birth Tales. My brother's name is Ollie and I'm Die Boy. Thank you for listening from Mommy's podcast. See you later.
Hello and welcome back to the Kiwi Birth Tales podcast. I am your host, Jordan. I am a mum of two. I've got beautiful Jai, who's just turned 4, and Ali, who turned 2 in September. Cannot believe I've got 4 and a 2-year-old. I also have a business baby, which is your birth project. And if you're listening to this, you might be pregnant. And if you are, then you definitely need to go and check out your birth project. Your birth project is the online hypnobirthing course you need to create your best birth. And don't be scared away by the hypnobirthing word. It is not airy-fairy. You won't be hypnotized, but you will have all of the tools that you need to create your best birth. Can't believe that we are in 2024. This is the first episode of the 2024 year, and it is a goodie. It is with Olivia. I spoke with the beautiful Olivia about her 2 pregnancy and birth stories, and she's got a lot of detail to give us, particularly about her son Julian, who was diagnosed with GAND, and at the time, I'm not sure if he still is, but at the time he was the only person in New Zealand to be diagnosed with GAND. So Olivia talks us through that whole process, and also genetic testing for her second pregnancy with her daughter Rose. And yeah, it's just a really interesting episode. I loved talking with Olivia. She's got 2 very, very different birth experiences, so she does a great job of talking us through those. I know you're going to get a lot from this episode, and I'm so happy to kick the year off with this one, so I hope you love it. As always, thank you so much for choosing to have me in your ears this week, and I will be back with more birth stories every week from now on throughout 2024. So I look forward to bringing you all these beautiful episodes, but for now, let's jump into this one with Olivia.
Hey Olivia, thanks so much for joining me on the Kiwi Birth Tales podcast today.
Hi Jordan, thanks so much for having me.
No problem. Do you want to tell the listeners a little bit about you and who is in your family?
I am Olivia and I have a husband called Ash. We have a fur baby who was our first baby. Her name's Ava. She's a Bernese Mountain Dog. And we have a 3-year-old Julian, or almost 3, and a 4-month-old, and her name is Rose.
Beautiful. Side note, I absolutely love Bernese Mountain Dogs. I feel like they are the coolest dogs, and you need, like, don't see many of them. Yeah, that's so cool.
There's been a few in our family, so we love them.
Oh, really? Cool. Yeah, awesome. Okay, amazing. Well, we're going to talk through everything pregnancy, birth, and postpartum mum life with you today. Why don't you kick us off with the journey to pregnancy for you and Ash?
We were pretty lucky with our getting pregnant. So we got married in 2019, and we had a couple of holidays booked in early 2020. One was to Japan and one was to the Philippines, the second trip, and our sort of plan was to start trying to have kids after our big holidays, and then we all know what happened in 2020, and we had various lockdowns and things, so I thought, oh well, we'll just start trying. And then the first month that we tried was actually when I fell pregnant with Julian. Woke up at 4 a.m. and I had the sorest boobs, so sore. And I thought, surely I can't be pregnant. And I went and took a pregnancy test and the line just came up straight away. Didn't have to wait at all. I put it back in the box, went back to sleep.
Oh my gosh, Olivia. How did you go back to sleep?
I don't know. I just thought, it's not true. And then went back to sleep. Ash's alarm went. And he went off to work. And then as soon as he left for work, I ran back into the bathroom, like took it back out of the box and had a look at it. I was like, oh my gosh, I'm pregnant. I could not believe it.
Yeah, amazing. And had you missed a period by that stage?
No, my period was actually due the next day. So it was the day before my period was due. And it was only because my boobs were so sore. That was the indication to me. I was like, oh, maybe I'm pregnant. Like I'd never had that before. So, yeah.
Do you remember the feel like, do you remember feeling, how did you feel? Like, were you shocked? Were you like overwhelmed? I just know that, like, yeah, when I took a pregnancy test both times, I was like, holy shit.
Yeah, that's exactly how I felt. Just I was like, holy shit. And my sister had actually come back from America because of all their lockdowns, and she was living with us at the time, and she came out of her room that morning and she looked at my face and she goes, "What's wrong?" I said, "I'm pregnant."
Oh my gosh.
So she was the first one to know.
Cool. Amazing. And how did you tell Ash?
I had all these elaborate things. I was going to do something nice, but I was just too excited. And when he got home from work, I just told him.
I feel like it's so hard to keep a secret and like actually plan something and go through with it when it's like you just want to spit it out. Yeah, amazing. Cool. And did you decide from there to go with a midwife? Like, did you know what to do next? How did you go about finding someone to care for you in your pregnancy?
I didn't really know what to do next. My sister-in-law had used an obstetrician, and my husband was very excited that we were pregnant, that he told everybody that weekend. This was a Friday, so he told everybody that weekend, including his brother and sister-in-law, and they sort of just said, "Oh, you need to ring in our obstetrician if you want to use them." And I didn't really know much about it, but I just decided to go with the obstetrician that they'd used.
Awesome. Cool. And how were you feeling in that first trimester? Do you remember like many pregnancy symptoms?
I had a few days of that kind of car sicky nausea, but other than that, I was horrendously tired. And I think my boobs stayed sore the whole first trimester. And then, yeah, but no real bad morning sickness or anything like that. So I was quite lucky in that respect, because it was something I was really fearful of. I hate throwing up.
For sure. And what did the care look like from an obstetrician perspective in your first trimester?
So I think I had an initial appointment at 10 weeks and then regular appointments, I think every 4 weeks. So I must have had a scan. I had the 12-week scan. I was offered to do a NIPT test, but I decided to wait to see the results of that 12-week scan. And then if that came back as high risk, then we were going to do the NIPT. But that didn't come back with any risk, high risk or anything. So yeah, so we just did the usual checks and blood tests and scans that are offered.
Awesome. And did you find out the sex of your baby in your pregnancy?
We did at that 20-week scan.
I always find it so interesting when I talk to mums on the podcast who don't find out, because I just have no self-control. Like, I could not. I just could not.
I wouldn't have been able to not. I was so excited to find out. Not that I minded either way, but I'm one of four girls, so it was quite exciting to know that I was having a boy. And we only had nieces, so it was the first boy in the family.
Amazing. And did you do anything special to tell everyone, or did you just let them know once you knew?
No, we just told everybody.
Us too. I feel like I love the gender reveal videos, but again, I'm just like so much effort to do them. And
So
awesome. Cool. And what about the way that you're feeling in your second trimester? So, you sort of mentioned that the boobs were sore in the first trimester. Did that subside in the second trimester? And how were you feeling sort of throughout that middle part of your pregnancy?
middle part, if I remember correctly, was fine for me. I had lots more energy. I know that the tiredness seemed to ease up, and I just felt really good. My second trimester was good.
Awesome. Cool. And what about birth education? Did you do any antenatal classes or any type of birth education in preparation for your birth?
We did an antenatal class, and I also did a calm birth hypnobirthing class. I think that was in the third trimester that I did that.
Yeah, awesome. And did that give you many thoughts around like how you wanted your birth to go, or did you have many ideas about what you thought you wanted your birth to look like?
I mean, I really wanted to try for as natural as possible, but I was open to any interventions that may need to happen. Yeah. I was trying to just be as relaxed as I could about and not have too much of a plan in place in case things went wrong. Yeah, that was sort of the approach I'd taken. I mean, I had a vision that I wanted to have a drug-free birth, but I was also aware that if that didn't happen, I wasn't too worried about it.
Yeah, cool, awesome. And were you doing anything at the end of your pregnancy to try and like prepare for birth or bring on labor, or yeah, talk us through the sort of end of your pregnancy?
So I ended up with sudden onset preeclampsia at 37 weeks, and I had to be induced the next day. So I never really got to the point where I'd finished work at 37 weeks, and that was on a Friday, and then I had my appointment on the Monday with obstetrician, and that was when my blood pressure was really, really high. And he said, oh, that's not good. Need to go off and get a blood test. He actually asked me how I was feeling. He said, with the blood pressure that high, I should admit you straight into hospital. I said, oh, I feel fine. And so he sent me off to lab tests to get a urgent blood test. And then he called me a couple of hours later and said, come in the morning, we have to induce you.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that was all a bit of a spanner in the works. When I'd, other than, you know, the typical third trimester feeling a little bit swollen and hot, and it was the middle of summer because it was, early February, I felt relatively okay. And, yeah, just had to come in the next day and be induced. So I didn't really have much time to overthink that situation other than that one night before, which I don't think I slept at all.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah. And did you know much about inductions? Like, had you heard many stories about inductions before yours?
No, but what was interesting that night, I remember listening on your podcast as many as I could find stories about inductions, just because I did sort of know from the antenatal class what an induction, you know, might look like, but I hadn't thought about it. So I actually found it quite helpful listening to a few stories on your podcast.
Yeah, cool. Awesome. And talk us through the following morning. How did you go? Like, what did you have to do to get ready? Talk us through going into hospital and then, into your induction story.
So we took our dog Ava to my brother and sister-in-law's in the morning. They were going to look after her. We went off to the hospital and my mum met us there because I wanted her there as part of my birth. And they were doing a trial at Auckland Hospital at the time for the Oblige trial, where they were doing the water balloon induction method. And so they asked me if I wanted to go into that trial. It was either going to be that or the gel. And I ended up, like, I had a 50-50 chance of either induction method. And I ended up getting the balloon catheter. And the idea is that they put it in and you go home for 24 hours and then come back the next day. So the weight of that balloon is supposed to soften the cervix. But when they were inserting it, I actually had quite a big bleed. So they decided to keep me in for that 24 hours in the hospital and just keep monitoring me. That was sort of the start. I remember just having it inserted maybe 10 o'clock in the morning. I think we'd got to the hospital around 8 o'clock. And by the time they did some bloods and all that kind of stuff, got the balloon catheter in about 10, stayed there overnight. That evening I said to Mum and Ash, oh, you may as well go home and get a good sleep. I guess tomorrow's going to be a busy day. Nothing really happened. The next morning when they checked me, I think I was only 1 or 2 centimetres dilated. There wasn't really much happening overnight, over that first 24 hours of having the balloon catheter in. And then as they took it out, they decided to break my waters. And then I just had to wait. As the contr I started getting a few small contractions, and I was just sort of hanging around the hospital, walking around, trying to get things moving. And at about 1 o'clock that afternoon, I think I was about 4 or 5 centimeters dilated, and they moved me into the birthing area, to start a Syntocin drip, just kind of start moving things along, because my blood pressure, though, obviously with the preeclampsia still monitoring me, my blood pressure was still quite high, and they thought, oh, we should really get the baby out. So they decided to put me on the Syntocin drip. And then my contractions started ramping up big time. And I asked for an epidural at that point. Well, I don't know if I asked for it. I think I screamed and said, get me an effing epidural. Well, I think it was because when they checked me and I was still only 4 or 5 centimeters dilated, I was like, I can't keep doing this. So yeah, I got an epidural. Oh, it must have been about almost 9 o'clock that night. I got the epidural in, and then fell asleep with the epidural in, just to have a little rest for maybe an hour. And I woke up and I was 9 centimeters dilated. So I think just probably relaxing, helped with that, that dilation at that point.
And do you remember feeling like you were coping okay? Like once you got your epidural and you got a bit of rest, do you remember feeling like you were coping okay and everything was going sort of as you thought it would? Or how were you feeling mentally?
Yeah, I was feeling all right mentally. And to be honest, even that first bit, I was feeling okay. It was just, I think I felt really disappointed when I was only 5 centimeters dilated and the contractions were quite strong. And so that's why I needed the epidural. And once it was in, I was really scared to get it put in because I really don't like needles, but I yeah, once it was in, I was quite happy, just carrying on with breathing and relaxing and knowing what was to come. And at that point as well, I was quite excited to see my baby. I knew it wasn't going to be far away.
Awesome. Cool. And take us through, the rest of your labor and birth story.
So I ended up, I think after the epidural was in and I had that sleep for an hour, and they checked me and I was 9 centimeters, and then it was maybe only 15 more minutes and I was 10 centimeters, and I started getting that bearing down feeling, and I started pushing, and they were monitoring the baby's heart rate, and his heart rate started going up quite a lot. And everything just started getting urgent. He wasn't coming down the birth canal. And I ended up having a episiotomy. He was actually stuck on the side, like looking to the side, and I was lying on one of those peanut balls. I was trying to get him in the right position, but his head was twisted and not in the right position. So they did an episiotomy and Vontoosed him out quite quickly. At that point.
And did you know much about an episiotomy or Vontoose before your birth?
Only as much as I'd learned in the antenatal class. So I knew what they were doing, but yeah, maybe hadn't thought about it. And I was glad I had the epidural at that point, I think.
Yeah, for sure. And how did you feel, like what sort of happened from there? So they got him out with the forceps after an episiotomy. Did they put him up on your chest? Was there any like concern for him initially?
His heart rate was still a little bit high, but they did put him on my chest and they were sort of checking him while he was there. They did get a pediatrician came in and checked him, because his APGAR score was not that great. But that sort of the paediatrician was happy, but they wanted to keep us in. So he was born at 11:30 at night, and they just wanted to keep us in the next day to monitor his heart rate and my blood pressure as well, making sure that.
Yeah.
And pretty much as soon as I gave birth, my blood pressure went back down, which they were happy about. So, yeah, so they sort of kept us in. We went down after I was all stitched and cleaned up and had a shower. We walked down to the ward, and I remember thinking to myself, oh, cool, the hard bit's over now. Mm-hmm. I'm done. Yeah. I've given birth. I have my baby. He didn't have a name. We hadn't quite decided on a name at that point. So we were walking down to the ward, and went to sleep. And then I woke up a few hours later, and I'd absolutely flooded the bed with blood. And I thought, oh, that's weird. I had no idea what a normal amount of bleeding was after giving birth. One of the nurses, I buzzed, and one of the nurses came in, and I said, oh, what's a normal amount of bleeding after you give birth, because I've just flooded the bed. And she sort of changed my sheets, and she said, oh, this is a bit borderline, I'll go get a midwife. She never came back. She changed my sheets, never came back. 2 hours later, I'd absolutely flooded the bed again, or maybe it might not have been 2 hours, I don't
know, oh,
whatever concept of time. I sort of went to the bathroom, I was just about passing out, flooded, blood everywhere. I was just walking through my blood, there was just so much blood. And I pushed the buzzer again, and as soon as a different nurse had come in, she pressed the emergency bell, and she goes, okay, 20 people are going to come running, you know, this is an emergency. And I was hemorrhaging. I actually had not even considered hemorrhaging. I didn't know what hemorrhaging was. I actually had no idea how much bleeding was normal after. I knew at that point it wasn't normal. And they sort of, I woke Ash up at that point, said they'd put him on a stretcher next to me, and they pushed a baby, the still nameless baby, out into the corridor, and Ash sort of was with me. I said, go after the look after the baby. And they called back my obstetrician, and they were sort of putting lines in my arms and in my thighs, and they were trying to stop the bleeding. And then they decided to take me off to theatre, and I just remember looking at the like at Ash standing in the corridor with this baby, thinking, what is he gonna do? He was thinking, what is he gonna do? And so I said, call mum, she'll come and she'll look after. He goes, I've already called her, she's on her way. So yeah, it was really scary. They sort of took me up to, I thought I was going to die. Like I asked them, I said, am I gonna die? And they said, oh no, you know, we're trying to make sure that doesn't happen. I think it was one of the nurses said that to me, and I was like, oh, okay, this is quite serious.
Very reassuring.
Yeah, it wasn't that reassuring. But my obstetrician arrived, and he was a lot more reassuring. So he sort of calmed me down. And then I had to have a spinal put in theatre, and because they decided to put a junior anaesthetist on, they took 3 attempts to get a spinal into me. And yeah, it wasn't that pleasant. It was a lot worse for me than giving birth. was the experience of me hemorrhaging. But it was okay what had happened. My uterus had gone floppy, I think can be linked to preeclampsia, or it's, you get a slightly higher risk of a chance of that happening. And they had ended up being able to contract my uterus. They checked that there was no placenta left behind, and there wasn't, and managed to stop the bleeding. And then I went back and joined Ash and the baby in one of the rooms on the ward.
And you were awake for all of that?
I was sedated, so they didn't put me under, because I'd had a sandwich after I'd given birth, and so they couldn't put me under general anaesthetic, so I was sort of just sedated with a spinal in. I do remember bits of it, but I think I was also very dizzy, just with losing so much blood. so I don't remember. I don't remember it that well.
And gosh, like such a massive thing to go through after giving birth, I'm sure totally unexpected. So how did you go with like processing that at the time? And you've obviously got like this new baby there that you're trying to learn to feed and like look after and all of this stuff. So you talk us through the next sort of 24 hours.
So the next 24 hours, I was doing okay. I sort of was relieved. I think I was relieved at that point, relieved that that was all done. I was feeling okay. They gave me an iron transfusion. I couldn't get, we'd named him not long after I got into the ward. So we called him Julian and I couldn't get Julian to latch very well, or at all. And so I was, when I was hemorrhaging, they had expressed I had heaps of colostrum, and they'd expressed heaps of it into syringes to help feed him. And so we were feeding him with the syringes, and I was trying to latch. And then they sort of said, oh, maybe he's not hungry because he's having so much colostrum from being syringe fed. And so then we stopped, but he still wasn't really latching that well.
Cool. And so when you were trying to get him to latch, were they giving you any assistance? What sort of advice were they offering you when you were having trouble with that?
The midwives in the hospital, because of the hemorrhaging, they didn't send me off to birth care. So I ended up staying in the hospital for a few nights. And they were, so it was the midwives in the hospital were helping me latch Julian, but he wasn't latching, so they were showing me how to express, they were teaching me to hand express and feed him with a cup. And so we were sort of doing that for a couple of days, and then we got discharged. He wasn't feeding, we got discharged. So my midwife came and she saw me at home, and she realized that he wasn't feeding well, so I got a breast pump, and I was feeding him trying to get him to feed from a bottle. She's also a lactation consultant, so she was trying to help me latch. I was trying to use nipple shields, and he was feeding a little bit. He was feeding a little bit with the bottle, so she sort of was coming regularly and checking. And he kept not gaining weight. So we sort of went through this process for a couple of weeks where we were feeding him with the bottle. I had lots and lots of milk, so there was no real problem with my supply. We were just trying to get him to latch, and he just really wasn't gaining weight. So she sent me back into hospital when he was about 2 weeks old. And they put in a NG tube. And we were in there for 2 weeks, and he was still not gaining weight that well, even though we're feeding him on these regular schedules. Every, 2 hours, I was 2 hourly feeding him with the NG tube. We had lactation consultants come and help. He was assessed by speech and language therapists and dietitians, and they were all just trying to, and pediatricians, everybody was just trying to figure out what was going on. Especially because now he had the NG tube in, we were expecting him to gain weight, but he just, he wasn't. They were weighing him every day. But he did drop quite a lot, but then he sort of was staying consistent. So there was about 4 or 5 days, sort of the end of that 2 weeks that we were back in hospital, that he just stayed the same weight, maybe put on a few grams, and they said, well, nothing's really changing with you being here, so we're going to discharge you. There was actually, while we were there, we had a couple of, it was at the February 2021, we had a couple of lockdowns, so I was also there on my own. Ash wasn't allowed to visit, like no one was allowed to visit in some of those periods of time, which I think mentally was quite hard. we got discharged with him still having the NG tube in. So he had the NG tube in for about 12 weeks, I believe. Yeah. And we were just sort of doing, we went to 3 hourly feeds, and eventually he just slowly started gaining weight. But yeah. When they discharged, they also had a referral for a paediatrician appointment and a ultrasound of his head to check that mm-hmm. there was no bleeding from birth, like no birth injuries yeah. for him. And everything sort of came up clear on that, on the ultrasound. There was no hemorrhage on his brain or anything.
Yeah.
But he just continued to not meet milestones. He eventually got to latch and breastfeed. I actually ended up breastfeeding him until he was nearly 2.
Oh, wow.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
He was, yeah, so what they sort of realized is he had really low tone through his mouth and tongue and central body. So he was quite a floppy baby. Yeah. And so they said that was probably why he couldn't latch. And that sort of started to improve as he got a bit older. And then, he was latched and he fed well, which was good. But yeah, he just kept not meeting milestones. Then they decided to refer him for an MRI. They said to me, it's a suspected cerebral palsy case. So there might be something that's gone wrong, either during your pregnancy or during birth, that's caused the cerebral palsy. Mm-hmm. And obviously all the emotions you overthink, what did I do wrong? I'd had a vomiting bug when I was pregnant with him in my third trimester, and I kept thinking to myself, oh, it must have been that vomiting bug. I must have eaten something, or that must have caused damage. And you sort of overthink every situation.
Yeah.
It might have been the Vontus delivery, or that's, as a mum, that's what you do. Mm. But eventually we had an MRI, and they saw some white matter changes on his brain. And I actually got a call from the paediatrician. First we had an appointment with her, and she said, oh, yep, no, he's got white matter changes on his brain. It's cerebral palsy. That's an indication that he's got cerebral palsy.
Mm.
And so we thought, okay, we can work with it. We'll do anything we can to look after him. We'd already, because of all the him not meeting milestones, we already had a bunch of therapists without having a diagnosis we're working with. So we still had a neurodevelopmental therapist that was working with us and helping build strength, and a speech and language therapist and a dietitian. And then she called me after this appointment that she told us that he had cerebral palsy. And she said, oh, his MRI has been reviewed by some neurologists, and we need to get him admitted into hospital straight away. We think there's something more serious going on. It might be, and she threw out all these big words, leukodystrophy and all these things. She said, don't look them up because you will, you'll go down a rabbit hole and it won't be good, but just, we need to get him into hospital. And the charge nurse will call you soon and talk about how we're going to admit him. I was at work when I got this phone call, because he was over 1 at this point and I'd gone back to work, and I just burst into tears. I was like, what? Like, I've, on one hand, now I've come to terms with this cerebral palsy diagnosis, which is not a degenerative thing, and she's now throwing all these terms out of all these degenerative, possibly him having a degenerative disorder. And so of course your mind jumps to is my baby going to survive? Like, what's happening? And I was thinking to myself, hang on, he's happy and playing at daycare at the moment, and now they're telling me I've got to admit him into hospital. I was just in absolute turmoil. So I sort of left work and I was waiting for a call from the charge nurse, and I got no call. And I said, oh, so what do? I just turn up to the hospital? I'm not sure what's going on. And then I didn't hear. And then the next day I didn't hear. So I rang the pediatrician office and I said, oh, I haven't, you know, I'm waiting for a call on how we're going to be admitted to hospital. Mm. And they said, so the pediatrician called me back and she said, oh, have you not had a call yet? She goes, I'll call the ward. She said, oh no, the ward's full. You know, he'll come in next week. We need to do a lumbar puncture and do all this more testing. Anyway, long story short, this lumbar puncture and this admission into hospital got rescheduled 7 times over the next few months.
Olivia. No way.
Yeah, 7 times over the next few months because of the ward being too full. It was that same, it was last year, 2022, when they had all this RSV and COVID and all these. So the children's ward at Waitakere Hospital was just overwhelmed. And then they ended up deciding, because it kept getting rescheduled, they decided to do it at Starship instead. So we went into Starship, finally got this lumbar puncture done. The genetics team had seen us. And by this point, I'd already had an appointment with the neurologist that had reviewed the MRI. And they were saying, we're thinking it might be more of a genetic condition as opposed to a cerebral palsy. And the genetics, they kept ruling out that, what they did is they ended up doing a blood sample and sending it off to Finland. And eventually, after all these lots and lots of tests, they came back with a diagnosis just at the beginning of this year and told us that he had a genetic change on the first chromosome on the GATA-D2B gene, and it meant that he had this condition called GAND, and he was the only one in New Zealand with it. There is less than 300 people in the world diagnosed with this condition. At this point, I was 6 weeks pregnant.
Oh, Olivia.
Just about fell over. I just couldn't believe it. I thought, oh my goodness, I just, because of all these things, they kept ruling out all the bad, really bad things that the pediatrician had initially said may have been the case. And she said, they sort of said to us, oh, maybe it is cerebral palsy again, while this genetics testing was happening in Finland. Yes, I said to the geneticist when he told us that he had GAND, that I was 6 weeks pregnant, and was there any way to test this pregnancy, that if this baby had GAND as well. And so they took some of Julian's blood, and they actually took samples of mine and Ash's blood, and they managed to set up a lab in Christchurch to be able to test for this genetic change just by comparing the DNA to what Julian's DNA was. So they were able to do that with an amniocentesis. So I had that at 16 weeks while I was pregnant with this my second baby. Yeah, so what had happened with this pregnancy was we'd decide, because we'd always wanted to expand our family. And so we fell pregnant straight away, which I was very grateful for. And, but also there was a lot of mixed emotions about it because, dealing with a whole lot of things going on with Julian, and I was very excited to be pregnant again, but I was also obviously, maybe less naive or less more skeptical maybe And so, yeah, when I did have the amniocentesis, it did come back that this baby didn't have mm-hmm. GAND. I did also choose at this point to do the NIPT and all extra testing that I could possibly do. Because now my whole world had been opened up to all these possibilities. Anyway, it came back that this baby was did not have GAND, which was great, and mine and Ash's DNA was also checked, and neither of us had that genetic change either. So what they'd concluded is that Julian was most likely a de novo case, which with something so rare, which means it's just a mutation that's happened in the womb. And with something so rare, that was more than likely going to be the case. But there were cases, there are a couple of families overseas that have two non-twin siblings that do both have GAND, and the parents aren't carriers either. So, yeah.
Yeah, and would they, or maybe you don't know, but would they have picked it up on a NIPT?
No.
In your first pregnancy? No.
No, because it's such a rare... So with the NIPT, they only check for about three or four different conditions, and it's at a chromosome level, whereas Julian sort of had all the chromosomes, but it was... How the geneticist explained it to me is your chromosomes are like books in a library. So you've got 23 from your dad and 23 from your mum, and then your genes are the pages in those books, or the chapters in those books. And Julian was just missing half of one of the chapters in one of those books. So when they do that testing during pregnancy, it is just checking to make sure all the books are there, as opposed to the pages are correct.
How far along in your second pregnancy were you when, I think you said you were 16 weeks when you did the amniocentesis, and how old was Julian at that stage?
So Julian was just over two at that stage.
And what was his, like, just so that we can understand a little bit more about GAND, what was his, like, where was he at in terms of his milestones, and what did this condition or diagnosis actually mean for him and for you guys?
So Julian was not walking or talking. So he ended up learning to sit at around 14 months. He didn't start rolling. He didn't actually even kick his legs until he was 8 months old. And the midwife explained to me in my second labor, she said to me, perhaps that's why you weren't able to birth him. Like, he wasn't kicking himself down the birth canal because he wasn't moving his legs. And what was interesting is during my second pregnancy, I realized that Julian never kicked me in my first pregnancy. I had movements of him, which, you know, when you're pregnant for the first time, you don't know what's normal and what's not. I had him move inside me, but not kicking. So, and I didn't realize that until I was pregnant the second time, and I felt lots and lots of kicking.
Yeah.
And by the time we had the diagnosis, he was crawling around. He's such a happy guy. He's not, he wasn't talking. He was saying the odd thing like tata and dada, and he learned to say mama just after he was two, which was such a cool moment for me. Crawling around, happy as. But so the other kids with his condition aren't all struggle to speak, so they have speech apraxia. Most of the kids had feeding troubles and that low muscle tone when they were first born. Some of them don't have any huge issues with walking. Some of them end up in a wheelchair. While I was pregnant for that second time, we actually had Julian had Botox in his left leg, 'cause his left leg was quite stiff. To help relax it, and in the hope that we will get him walking. So he's still not walking, but he's sort of shuffling around on his knees and doing lots and lots of crawling. So yeah. We're hoping to get him walking in the next year.
Yeah, amazing. And okay, so let's talk a little bit about your second pregnancy, and then into your sort of birth story. So did you go with the same obstetrician? Did you decide to go for a midwife? What was your approach the second time around?
Yeah, so I went with the same obstetrician. I did every type of testing I could to check for any other complications or anything. My pregnancy was much the same as my first one, just horrendously tired, not very sick at all, just a little bit of nausea. I found out I was pregnant, it was just before last Christmas, and I was making a coconut cake, and I opened a can of coconut cream, and it absolutely smelled off. I thought, that's weird. No. Opened another can of coconut cream. I was like, that's so weird. Both of these cans of coconut cream smell off. Opened a third can of coconut cream. That smelled terrible too. And I thought, oh my goodness, I must be pregnant. Went off and did a pregnancy test. And yep, sure enough, came back pregnant. And it was still a couple of days before my period was due.
Yeah. Oh my God, it's funny, isn't it? How there's like some little things like that that you're just like, nah, I'm pregnant.
Yeah. So but pretty good pregnancy. I didn't get preeclampsia this time. Just horribly tired.
And with this birth, did you want to birth in hospital? Did you like, what were your sort of thoughts around how you wanted it to go this time?
I had booked in for an elective cesarean. I think just after my hemorrhaging last time and just the complications that I had, my thought was, if I had to be induced, I didn't want to be induced again, and so I had chosen to do an elective cesarean as opposed to being induced. However, if I went into labor naturally, I was happy to give birth or to try. And the obstetrician had said, because I had sudden onset preeclampsia last time, that they would book in a cesarean for 39 weeks, around 39 to 40 weeks, because just in case I got preeclampsia again. So that was sort of my intention for my birth.
And did you do any different birth education this time around?
No, I think just with life being busy, I was working full time and in between therapy appointments for Julian, and just I actually wasn't thinking a huge amount about it.
Awesome. And talk us through the end of your pregnancy. How are you feeling and what ended up happening for your labor and birth?
So I finished up work again at 37 weeks. I'd had a cesarean date booked in. On the weeks, so I had 1 week off work, there was a gastro bug going around daycare, and I was so looking forward to having a week or a couple of weeks to myself, just after like a busy few years. But because there was a gastro bug going around our daycare, I decided to keep Julian off daycare that week. So him and I hung out. I was obviously quite tired end of pregnancy, and we just sort of had a week, him and I. It was busy, but it was fun, and we just did lots of things together. Even though the weather was quite miserable, I remember. And then on the Saturday, we took him off to get his first haircut. And I walked out of the hairdresser. It was a beautiful sunny day. And I walked out of the hairdresser and I was so sad that we'd cut all his beautiful curls. He had beautiful golden curls. And I was so sad that we'd cut them off. So I said to Ash, do you mind if I walk home and you can drive Julian home? We went to the playground first, played at the playground, and then I decided to walk home. And I live near a pony club, and I sort of was walking on the uneven ground through the pony club, walking through, listening to a podcast, and I was feeling lots of Braxton Hicks. I'd had lots of Braxton Hicks this pregnancy. And I remember texting Ash saying, the Pony Club's bringing on a few Braxton Hicks.
Mm-hmm.
I came home and I was folding, washing, having a good productive afternoon. Still lots and lots of Braxton Hicks. Decided to have a sleep at about 3 o'clock, just after a busy week. I was tired. At about 10 o'clock on that Saturday night, I said to Ash, I said, maybe have an early night. I feel like something might be happening. My Braxton Hicks were just sort of getting, you know, a little bit stronger.
Yeah.
And then I sort of thought at about 11 o'clock, I said, maybe I'll time some of these. I'm wondering if they're a bit regular. And my waters hadn't broken or anything. And I sort of timed and they were maybe 7 or 8 minutes. And then there was 12 minutes and then maybe 6 minutes. I thought, no, it's definitely Braxton Hicks. It's not regular. And then maybe 40 minutes later, I decided, maybe I will time these. They're not sore or anything, but they just feel quite frequent. And then at midnight, I decided to ring the obstetrician because I'd sort of thought, they're kind of 4 and 5 minutes apart, but they're not very strong. So I wasn't too sure what was going on. And in comparison to the contractions that I'd had after being induced, it was just sort of tightenings in my tummy. It didn't feel like big, strong contractions or anything. And he said, so the obstetrician said, I'll come into the hospital. We'll check you out. What time can you be here? I said, probably by 1. So we got into the hospital at 1 a.m. on a Sunday morning. And I walked down from the car park, went up to the assessment area. Mm-hmm. And then at that stage, I sort of went up to the reception and I just leant on the counter and I said, and she said, are you having a contraction? I said, I'm not sure. Maybe. I said, my waters haven't broken. So I'm not too sure. And she said, we'll check you. And I said, you know, the obstetrician's coming to meet us here, and he'd already rung ahead and he came to meet us. But she sort of checked me. And as soon as he came in, he said, we're off to the labor room. And I said, so she'd just checked, sort of put that fetal heart rate monitor on and checked my blood pressure and all that kind of stuff. And then he said, we're off to the labor room, birthing room. And I said, really? Like am I going to give birth? He goes, yeah, we'll have a baby by the morning. I said, are you sure? And I said, no one's really checked me properly yet. And he goes, no, we'll check you in the room. I've spoken to the midwives and they're pretty sure that you're not far off, you know, being ready to give birth. I said, okay. So off we went. We walked to the labor room. And it was the 13th, and I remember the reception lady on reception in the birthing area said to me, go to room 13's ready. I said, room 13 on the 13th of August. And the obstetrician said, you're not superstitious, are you? I said, not today. Off we went into the room, and then he goes, and he'd already said to me, do you want an epidural? And I said, absolutely, I definitely want an epidural. I'm not doing it without an epidural. So he said, okay, well, we've got to take some blood once we get into this birthing room. We'll take some blood, I'll get an IV line into you, and I'll call the anaesthetist. I said, okay. And we got into the birthing room. He was trying to put an IV line into me, and I suddenly sat down on the floor and I said, I've got this bearing down pain. And he said, okay, hop up on the bed. And the anaesthetist walked in at that point. So I didn't have an IV line in, but he'd managed to take some blood to send off to the lab to do a blood test. And he turned the anaesthetist away and said, it's too late. I said, what do you mean? I said, you haven't even checked me yet. I said, I'm not doing this. He goes, no, I think you're ready. I said, but my waters haven't broken. I was just wasn't really sure what was going on. And then he did check me and I said, he goes, you're 10 centimeters dilated. The sac's right there. This baby's going to be born in the sac. I said, oh my goodness. And then he's trying to get me the midwife was trying to get me the gas line out at that mm-hmm. point. So I was really upset that I wasn't going to be able to have an epidural. And then I thought, actually, I just need to breathe now. I don't really have a choice. Yeah. I just need to focus on my breathing. And then I yelled. That was the first time I sort of made a big, that time the contraction hurt. And then the midwife said to me, next time you get that urge to yell, use that same feeling to push. I said, ready to push already? Mm-hmm. She said, yep, that's it. Go push. And then, three pushes later, out she came in her amniotic sac. And I
isn't
said,
that crazy?
It was absolutely incredible. It was crazy. I said to them three times, I said, Did I just have a baby? Are you sure I had just had a baby? And I said, I want to do that again.
Yeah. Isn't that crazy, the difference between the contractions that you felt after being induced versus that?
Absolutely. And they did also say to me that contractions before your waters break are usually milder than after mm-hmm. your waters break as well. So that's maybe why I wasn't sure.
Mm.
Like they weren't that strong.
So interesting.
So it was cool. It was awesome.
Amazing. Very cool. And did they pop her straight up onto your chest and everything was all good?
She did the crawl up, latched straight away.
Oh wow.
Incredible.
And did you need any stitches or anything like that?
I had a little bit of grazing and he did do a couple of stitches. So I just had a local anesthetic before he did the stitches.
Yeah. And was there any concern for postpartum hemorrhage this time around? Like what was the monitoring that was required?
No, they weren't too worried about it. I think maybe because I didn't have preeclampsia. They didn't seem too worried about it. Obviously he was aware. Oh, they did give me a couple of injections in my leg to help prevent, mm-hmm. to help my uterus contract, make sure that my uterus was properly contracted.
Awesome. And how long did you end up spending in the hospital?
So we went straight from the birthing room to birth care that night. So she was born at, I think, 1:59. So we'd got to the hospital just after one and she was born at 1:59 and then we were at birth care by 3 or 4 a.m.
Awesome. Amazing. And talk us through the next couple of days. How were you feeling recovering from your birth? Were you on a high after that birth experience?
Absolutely.
Talk us through it.
Awesome. Such a high. I felt really good. I was actually really relieved that I didn't need a cesarean. Because I was really scared about that. Well, not really scared. I was just a bit nervous. My main fear was around not being able to lift because Julian's not walking. So my biggest fear was I wasn't going to be able to now lift my 17 kilo toddler for 5 or 6 weeks after having a cesarean. And so I was so relieved that I was going to be able to do that, and everything had just gone so well. Like I was just, I was on such a high.
Amazing. Awesome. And I know you said that she did a breast crawl and latched initially. How did you go with breastfeeding this time?
Fine. She's fed well sort of from then. So I did have that initial pain for a few days, but I was also probably more aware that that was going to happen, and it didn't worry me too much. I just used nipple cream and got on with it, really.
Amazing. Awesome. And how did you find going home and introducing Rose to Julian? And you're a mum of two now. Talk us through the change in having a new baby when you first got home.
It was a bit of a transition, but I don't know. I think I was on just such a high and so relieved. I did obviously have a few up and down emotions as you do after giving birth. But I mean, there was definitely some hard days, but nothing I feel that was too, I just was sort of happy to have my family. And, you know, this was what sort of we'd envisioned, having two children. And here I was just feeling really grateful and blessed to have everybody here safely.
Amazing. And how are you going now? Like, you're obviously 4 months in and you've survived the
the four months with two kids.
And yeah, how are you finding everything now?
Yeah, good. I mean, Julian had a little bit of a rough patch when we actually first brought her home, because he you know, he wasn't now the only child, and his sleep turned you know, he started waking in the night, whereas he was sleeping through. But that's all settled down now. He's sleeping great. She's in that nice 4 month sleep change where she's likes to be awake a few times at night, and it's been good.
Well, thank you so much for joining me on the podcast, Olivia. I've really loved talking to you, and such an interesting story, and I really love your second birth story. I just think that was super interesting to hear, and also amazing that she was born in her sack. So thank you so much for coming on the podcast and sharing your stories with us. I know there'll be lots of mums and dads out there listening who are super grateful, so thank you.
Oh, thank you. Thanks so much for having me.
Thanks so much for tuning into this week's episode of Kiwi Birth Tales. Another welcome back to the 2024 season of the Kiwi Birth Tales podcast. I hope you enjoyed this episode. I'd love to hear from you. If you want to find me, Jordan, Jordyn, at kiwibirthtales.com, or you can find me on Instagram at kiwibirthtales or at Your Birth Project. And I will be back with another wonderful birth story episode next week.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.